Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. It's really a pleasure and an honor to be here. I believe this is the third or fourth year that I'm participating in this conference. I think it's a wonderful idea, and I commend you all for coming out. I'm going to start with three stories that I hope will illustrate what I mean by get it. When I say parents who get it, it means parents who have the ear to the ground, parents who understand what's really going on. So permit me to share three stories with you. In 1998, I spoke at an Agudas Yisrael convention, and I mentioned that there were, at the time, I found out from the kids in the street that there were frum kids dealing drugs in major Jewish communities. I presented this information to the Mayetzes Gedalia Torah, the Rashi Yeshiva of the Agudah movement, and I asked a practical question if I should report them to the authorities. My great Rebbe, Rav Pam, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was still alive then, as was Rabbi Scherer. I presented the information unanimously. They told me not only could I go, but I must. They have an obligation. They're right for them, and they have an obligation to report them to the authorities. After the presentation, after my talk, a Rosh Yeshiva came over to me. I was impressed with him before, but he went up many notches in my book then. He asked me, he says, listen, Rabbi Yaakov, do I have to worry that my Talmidim are using drugs? This guy's a regular, mainstream, for lack of a better term, black hat yeshiva. He says, do I have to worry that my kids are using, my Talmidim are using drugs? So I said, yeah. So he said, the Bachram, mind you, this was 1998. This was a lifetime ago. He says, the Bachram that I'm learning a ketzais with, you know, a complicated Gemara, this. So I said, listen, Rosh Yeshiva, all I can say is that when I grew up, I was a very wild kid. I really didn't learn much, and I'm not proud of it. I'm just, that's what it was, you know. I didn't really learn much till I was 16 years old or so. But none of my friends drank, none of my friends used drugs. There was probably 3 degrees of separation between me and a drug addict. The drug addict and I. So I said, today, every single one of your Talmidim is 1 degree of separation from someone who's using. So at the very least, it's within their Nakudas HaBechir. It's within their set of what they're tempted with. So he says, what should I do? What would you recommend that I do? May Hashem forgive me. I said, does the Rosh Yeshiva know what a joint looks like? I said, does the Rosh Yeshiva know what marijuana smells like? If I gave the Rosh Yeshiva an ecstasy pill and said, this will be good for a headache. I said it obviously with Yiras HaKavod. They said it with tremendous respect. I'm adding on a little bit. But I really said the content was the same. So I said, if the Rosh Yeshiva doesn't know, and nobody in the yeshiva knows, so how do you know when a boy tells you, you know, have a little cold, that he didn't do a line of cocaine the night before, or an hour before? So I said, my recommendation would be that I have an African-American sergeant who's been my Rebbe in this parsha, in this whole subject, and I would send him to the yeshiva, speak to the Rosh Yeshiva about what it looks like. So he said, set it up. To his extraordinary credit, I told him, and I said, listen, Rosh Yeshiva, I backtracked a little. I said, I walked it back. As I said, listen, Rosh Yeshiva doesn't really need to do this. You get 2 rabbeim in the yeshiva who are, you know, closer in age to the Bachram. Somebody in the yeshiva has to know what pot smells like. So he said, I have just the right people. I set it up. But he said, I'm going to be there. I don't want them to think that they're doing work that I wouldn't do. That's someone who gets it. Second story. I often, when I meet people for the first time, especially educators, I like to find out if they get it. So I have a few standard questions that I ask. One of them is, do you have any challenges with kids who aren't motivated to daven? Okay, folks, the number one response I get is? What? Number one response is? Davening is so beautiful here. It's so geschmack, Rav Yaakov. Why don't you come down one morning? It's meredith. I kid you not. Number one response. So I posed this question to a mechanech, an educator. Straight face. Immediate response. He says, why should they daven? What are they missing? He said, look what I'm telling him to do. He says, 2:10 every day, we start mincha. So I'm telling he's a high school principal. He said, look what I'm telling the kids to do. 2:10, all of a sudden, they're supposed to develop this intense yearning to connect to a God they can't see, speak in a language they don't understand, and ask for things they don't need. I said, you get it! You get it! Story number three. I was at a Chassidish Simcha in Muncie. This goes back over 10 years ago. And I'm listening to whatever chitter chatter and talk at the wedding. I'm standing with a group of people more or less my age, reading glasses age, and some of them a little younger than that. Stop smiling, you'll get there too. Anyway, so I hear one Hasidish boy in Yiddish yell across the room. He says, I'll meet you at Usher Anshul. Oh, I'll translate. Usher Anshul. So he says, I'll meet you at Usher Anshul's house at 10 after 11. And the guy answers back. He says, nah, you know what? 11:30 is probably better. Now, I don't know. I've been blessed or cursed with like an antenna that starts tingling when I hear things I shouldn't be hearing, even if I don't understand them. And my antennas were ringing. I said, why is 10 after 11? These Hasidic guys, you know, no, we don't do stuff on time. I don't know, I said, Usher Anshul. I said, oh my God, it's United Artists. It's Rosh Hatevis. U is Usher is United. A is Anshul is Artist. He's telling him, I'm going to meet you at a movie theater in Spring Valley at 10 after 11. And this guy answers back that he's a better movie at 11:30. I'll meet you there then. That was the conversation. So I said, he said, in a second. And I didn't know, I didn't know that code. I just, my antennas were tingling. He says, so immediately there was another establishment in the area with different Rosh Hatevis, and I answered, you know what, let's meet at this and this place instead. And all the teenagers in the room started staring at each other. I went over to them, I said, don't worry about it. No one knows what's going on. You can keep using the same code. Okay, folks, that's what get it sounds like. So I just encourage you, you're here to study parenting, you're here to learn what you can. Think about really getting it. When I say get it, means understanding what's going on, really understanding the challenges that today's kids are facing, and be able to guide your children. And there's not always, it's not all fabulous if you get it. Parents who get it usually don't sleep as well at night because they really know what's going on. Parents who don't get it say, oh, Baruch Hashem, everything's great. Parents who get it mark the back of the liquor bottles in their house, put little dots there. Parents who get it see the teenagers walking around Purim with Poland Spring bottles and understand that they're probably not hydrating and it's probably not water in that bottle. Parents who get it listen more than they talk. Parents who get it guide more than lecture. And I encourage you, I think the reason you need to get it is because your children need your guidance so badly. And my experience, and I've been dealing, you know, I was an eighth grade Rebbe. I started in 1982. At the age of 22, I volunteered to teach a Bayes class, the weakest track of the yeshiva. I did that for 15 years until I started my school and started Project Yes. I've always had almost no choice but to have my ear to the ground and to get it and to see what was really going on with the kids. And children so desperately would love our guidance. I'm speaking theory now. I'm going to get to practice soon, and then I'm going to open up to some questions, and I really would appreciate your feedback and your thoughts. But kids need your guidance so badly. I'd like you to think about what the barriers are. Why wouldn't a child tell you that some kids in my class are having a drinking problem, or I'm having a drinking problem, or some kids are getting into trouble, whatever that might be, whatever the real challenges are. Again, I'll talk about that in a few moments. But while we're doing theory, here's my thought. Why did God give us free choice? This shul doesn't have free choice. The summer camp you send your kids to doesn't have completely free choice. The roads, you can't drive wherever you want, whenever you want. There's no, very few institutions or organizations have free choice. None of them. You would think they couldn't exist that way. It would be total anarchy and total chaos. And God gave us free choice. Why is that so? Let me ask you another question. There's a fascinating construct in halacha, in Jewish law, that says that between the ages of 13 to 20, exactly adolescent years, kids who injure others or cause damage, they're chayiv b'dinei adam, meaning that they're obligated to pay for whatever damage they cause, but they're patur b'dinei shemayim. That means if a kid doesn't keep Shabbos, God says, okay, I get it. You have till you're 20 to get your hands around this whole Shabbos thing. But if they key a car or if they break someone's window, they have to pay for it. What's the logic behind that? I'd like to suggest that the logic behind it all is as follows. We learn more from our mistakes than anything else. That's the reality. We wish it were different, but that's the way it is. We put on we take an umbrella, or we put a sweater on, or take a raincoat with us when the weather's not good. Not because our parents told us to, or because we did it, because we got wet and got sick once. The vast majority, or a very large percentage of kids who stop drinking do it because they got roaring drunk once and got sick and remember that horrible feeling. That teaches them more than anything else. I can give you some Torah thoughts on that. I'm going to take a pass, which is a hard thing for a rabbi. But if you really want to know, I'll take it during Q&A. But here's the thinking. God gave us, our children, the opportunity to make mistakes while they're in our homes. And that's why God gave them a waiver. And he said, I get it. The problem with that is that we need to be able to guide them through their mistakes, and that we're really not in a position to do that unless they seek our advice, or unless we really have a relationship with them that doesn't involve lecturing them. I often say, think about the quality of the lecture. I'm giving a talk right now. I hope you find it meaningful. I hope you walk away with some practical advice. But think of the difference between my presentation. Now, think of the four qualities of levels of interaction. I'm speaking to you now. Again, I hope I'm honored that you're here. I hope you find it meaningful. During question and answer, it's very possible that you might find that more meaningful than my talk, because I prepared this talk not knowing your lives. When someone gets up and raises their hand and asks a question, in all likelihood, it might feel more personalized. You might find more better information that way. If you ask the question, that would be a third level, where you'd say, listen, Rabbi Horowitz, we're having an issue with whatever it is. That's much more personalized. And the fourth level would be, if you'd say, listen, Rabbi Horowitz, could you do me a favor? You know, can I have 10 minutes with you afterwards? There's something my husband and I would like to discuss with you. That would really be something that would be a much better level of interaction, a much better level of hadracha, of guidance. And I propose to you that it's like that in parenting. Level one, lecture, we're all great at. We're all good at giving lectures to the kids. How many of us get to level four, where a kid comes over and really asks us for advice? And I think more than anything else, that's what getting it means. It means being able to position yourself to understand the children's lives, and so that, in addition to many other benefits, that they're able to seek your guidance. So why would a child not ask their parents? The kid's got a drinking problem. Let's keep it simple. Okay? You have a 16-year-old son. Friends are starting to drink. Getting a little concerned, you know. Why would they not sit down with you and say, hey, mom, dad, I'm having a drinking problem. Or I might have a drinking problem. Or I don't have a drinking problem, but I like drinking anyway. Go ahead, folks. Why wouldn't they do it? They're afraid of disappointing you. Go. Number one. Go ahead. Anything else?
Maybe they enjoy it and don't want to stop.
They don't want to stop. Okay. Okay. Go ahead. Anybody else? Yes?
They're afraid of judgment.
Afraid of judgment. Good. Anything else?
Afraid of punishment.
Go ahead. They don't want to. So, disappointed. They don't want to stop. They're afraid of being judged. They're afraid of punishment. Anything else? They don't think they're doing anything wrong. Right. They don't see that it's a problem. Okay, go ahead. Anybody else? They think you don't get it. Right? Which is why the topic of the talk is parents who get it. One of the things that I hear most often when I speak to the kids, say, why don't you talk to your parents? They say, oh, come on. You know. Think of it this way. Imagine if you had a financial problem. Okay, you invested in something. Would you come to me? I don't think so. Like, would you say, listen, Rabbi, I see, you know, you really get it. I'm having this problem with some investments I made. Like, you wouldn't talk to me because I don't get it financially. I get it like the next person. Hopefully I can balance my checkbook. But nobody's going to come to me for financial advice because they know I don't get it. So I propose to you that every single one of these barriers has to be taken away before a parent or kid will speak to you. Okay? What you all said was correct. They don't want to disappoint us. They don't want to upset us. They don't want to be judged. They don't want to be punished. They think we don't get it. One kid, I'll never forget, I asked one of the kids why he doesn't talk to his parents. That's the first thing I do. I always try to get the kids to talk to their parents about whatever's going on. One of them said, he was just really funny. He said, you know, my mother's like the nicest lady in the world. I love her to death. She's amazing. She's such a good mother. Every time she finds out that I'm doing something wrong, she goes like this. And takes out a tillum. He said, why should I upset her? You know, she's such a nice lady. I'm going to read to you some quotes. Those of you with smartphones, meaning everyone, if you want to look it up, the title is Teenagers Binge Lead Scarsdale to Painful Self-Reflection. I was an 8th grade Rebbe. I'm used to having kids doing stuff while I'm talking. Feel free to do it right now. It's fine. It's from 2002. And what happened was the community in Scarsdale, I was working with kids much more heavily than I am now in substance abuse prevention and other things like that. And it hit me. It was such fascinating parallels between what went on there and our community. What happened was, there was a party. We call it an open house. There was an open house party in Scarsdale. The parents were away, and the kids decided that they would have a great time. 600 kids came to the party. Several dozen of them got so violently ill that so few of them had to be hospitalized. They were staggering drunk. And the parents in Scarsdale said, here's the reaction. Most of them said, like, that stuff doesn't happen here. Here? Our kids are getting drunk? Our kids are doing drugs? I want to read to you a few quotes from the piece. I really encourage you, if you have a moment. Mr. Kimmy, the principal, arrived just as the 8 p.m. dance was beginning, found a third of 600 students drinking screwdrivers they mixed in various homes. They used vodka sneaked from their parents' liquor cabinets and disguised in Poland spring water bottles. Sound familiar? When it was time for question and answers, a few parents begged for guidance on how to enforce rules when other parents won't, how to be brave enough to say no to their children. One set of parents was summoned by the principal to pick up their intoxicated son, sent the housekeeper instead. And one of them said they were afraid that if the kids get suspended, it's not going to look good on the college transcripts. By the way, parenthetically, being dead doesn't work on the transcripts either, you know? Just pointing it out. And it was really fascinating because a lot of the stuff that you, what we see, those of us who work with adolescents, see so many similarities that you feel that we're in a religious community. This stuff doesn't happen. Or, and I know that all of you understand on some level that it happens. Obviously, none of us are brought up in a bubble. But to understand the real deal of what's going on with the children is something that's just so important. And it's also important, folks, to teach your children to get it. There was yet another scandal last week where a popular, charismatic rabbi was busted for abusing children, young ladies in particular. And part of that is that we shelter, some of us sometimes, shelter our children to the point that they don't get it. And what keeps happening again and again and again is that basic rules of yichud, and I'm not even talking about the religious aspect of it, basic protocol are consistently violated by these folks. And because we're trained that people should, who look a certain way and dress a certain way, must behave a certain way, they get away with stuff like this. And I'm often asked, you know, what should we do about, I always say like this, give me the same set of rules that the custodian has. You wouldn't let the custodian take your kid home alone, don't let me take your kid home alone. Treat everybody the same. We need consistency in whatever rules there are. We need to educate our children. It's all part of it. It's all part of the same idea of getting it and understanding it. And research consistently shows that the kids who are most vulnerable are the kids who are naive. The one final thing on that, and then I'll get to the practical and take questions. Around the time that this whole Scarsdale thing blew up, many of the school districts, including mine in Rockland County, but many of the school districts in the northern suburbs, Westchester, Rockland, I think a few Bergen schools also, participated in a study on drug use. This was in 2002 when this thing blew up. They said, hey, whoa, there's so many kids using and drinking. They discovered that the inner city schools had, inner city families who sent their children to inner city schools had a higher drug rate than the affluent suburban communities. But the trend was that in the inner city, the drug rate was dropping. In the affluent suburbs, the drug rate was lower, but it was trending the wrong way. It was rising. And the same reason was obvious. The result, what the study clearly showed, was that the inner city parents got it. And they spoke to the children. Whenever they left the house, they spoke to the kids. Don't you use drugs, and I'm going to check you, and I'm going to random test you. So all of this is part of what we call getting it. And if you want your children to seek your guidance, I propose to you that these barriers need to be removed. The exact barriers that you all correctly spoke about. Telling your children, I'd like to know what's going on in your life, even if it's going to upset me. Not punishing them for things that they tell you. Getting it yourself is obviously critical. Discuss, don't lecture. Really, to discuss things, to explain things. You know, one of the things that we often think that our kids are very street smart and they know everything. They know everything about the birds and the bees. They know everything about substance abuse. They know everything because we hear them very often making references to different things, and we assume they get it. They have lots of information, folks, but they don't always have the right information. They know stuff, but they don't know what they need to know very often. And that's where we play such an important role, to help them sort through it. I was asked to speak to some young teenagers, boys and girls, in a community where there was a very large public scandal involving someone in a leadership position. And I met with the parents were there. I insisted, of course, the parents got to be there. The parents came with the teenagers. It was about 5-6 families. And they asked me to come speak to the kids because the kids were reeling. They were reeling. Forget the kids. And they wanted a place to talk. Anyway, we had a really good talk. And towards the end, I asked the parents, because the parents did all the talking. I said, okay, folks, do me a favor. Before we break this up, I want to hear from the teenagers now. And please, parents, nobody say anything. Just let them talk. Here's what I'd like you to finish. I'd like you to finish the following thought. I just wish all the adults in this community would, and the very first response, a 10, 12-year-old girl, I wish they would speak to us in plain, simple English. This is the exact quote. She said, I keep hearing the word inappropriate. What does that mean exactly? Everybody's speaking about different things, but they're not telling us. I know what inappropriate. She said, Mom, she turns to her parents, Mom, Dad, whatever you're going to tell me, we see a lot worse online. So just speak to us honestly and tell us what's going on and what we should do to protect ourselves. That's what being a parent who gets it is all about. And I propose to you that by guiding our children, I mentioned earlier about the notion that God gave us the teenage years, gave people, humans, the teenage years, so that they could make their mistakes while we're around. Very often parents try to control the environment too much. Now, I'm certainly not suggesting in any stretch of the imagination that you should allow your children unfiltered internet access. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. My thinking on the technology is postpone, protect, prepare. That's my line on it. I do an hour and a half talk on it. I can't do it now, obviously. But, you know, postpone as long as you can. Protect them by filters, by watching, by whatever it is. But ultimately, you have to prepare them to make good choices. And if all you're doing is postponing and protecting, you're not helping them become adults. And when parents overregulate and don't let their children when they just try to control the environment completely, they're just postponing adolescence. Their kids become adolescents when they're 18. Because they haven't had that freedom to make their mistakes. We're really, in a sense, we're trying to outsmart God when we completely overregulate. Again, I want to make it clear. It's about moderation. It's about balance. It's about protecting your children, watching them, seeing to it that you have one set of books at home, that the kids do stuff in front of you. I'll tell you, I in deference to one of my mentors and one of my heroes, Dr. Abraham Twersky, I asked him a question. I asked him hundreds of questions over the years, and he was so gracious. He gave me so much of his time, as did Dr. David Palkowitz, on the issue of child safety, to which I'm forever grateful. He's here. I just wanted to publicly thank him for being incredibly gracious. He reviewed every single page and every single picture of our child safety book numerous times. David, I'm forever makatov to you. And I asked Dr. Twersky the following question. So I asked Dr. Twersky, I said, my kids are drinking beer. I had teenagers at the time. They're Kanahara 34 and 32 now, but they were teenagers once. And I said, my kids like to drink beer. Should I buy it for them and put it on my Shabbos table? I said, the idea of doing that, I break into hives when I think about, just popping beer down on my table for these kids. So he said no. He said, I'm just mentioning it because I disagree with him. I don't understand it, but I feel obligated to say what he said because he's a gadol in the field. He's a giant in the field, and I'm not. But I'm going to give you, my advice is going to be obviously different than what he said, but I feel obligated to mention it because you should know that an expert in the field said that. He said that parents shouldn't drink at all. I don't understand it. And I told him I didn't understand it. And we ultimately wound up speaking to our kids and told them, if you want beer, don't I catch you in the backyard drinking out of a paper bag. If you want a drink, in front of us, at the table, tell me which brands you want, and I'll make sure you have it for Shabbos. And I used to do that. I did that for more than a few years. And one of my sons, told me, he says, Ta, you don't have to buy it in 7-Eleven in Muncie. Go to a store on 202, which is out of the neighborhood. He said, you don't have to. It's not bakovedik for you. He said, I promise you. He said, it's not bakoved, Tati. You're a manal of a yeshiva here. You shouldn't be walking out with 2 6-packs on Friday afternoon. And it was, he was adorable, like he was trying to protect my car. And I said, I don't have 2 sets of books. If I'm doing it, I'm going to do it in public. And if people don't like it, so they don't have to marry my kids, whatever. They don't have to mishadach with me. I refuse to do it. And should I tell you, it was the biggest kavod in my life. You know, I was singing my Yedidus, you know, walking out, with a summer ale and whatever the, you know. But that's the way it is. And we trained our children to not do stuff behind their back. Did they listen all the time? I'm sure they didn't. But, you know, the ultimate compliment is you hope that your kids, when they leave your house, they could tell you, you know, Mom, Dad, I was able to talk to you about anything. That's what this is really all about. It's about thinking of what you could do to position yourself so that you'd be able to guide them, that you get it and understand what's really going on in their lives, so you could help guide them through this very confusing and challenging phase in their lives. I'll take some questions, folks. Fire away. I will not... Don't shy. Don't be shy. I won't be... I'll respond to any question. Yes, please.
Okay. My question is, I know that the local yeshiva days around Simchas Torah and Purim always put out emails and letters, you know, watch children, or during yeshiva break, watch children, don't let them Miami by themselves, and they seem to care about that. But I've heard that once they go to yeshiva in Israel, it seems, I don't know with absolute certainty, but it seems that the Rebbeim in Israel sometimes push the drinking on Purim and everything like that. So even if you're a parent who gets it, now you're 6,000 miles away, you send your child to an environment that you trust is safe, and then...
That's a fantastic question. Right, so the fantastic question, it was basically, you know, the schools tell us here not to let our kids drink, and we send them off to Israel, and some of the rabbis are getting plastered and giving the kids it. So, I very strongly feel that you shouldn't send your children to schools that don't match your philosophy on life. Now, it doesn't mean on every single thing. I think you should do diligence. You should do diligence. You should really look into schools before you send your children. And one great way to check the supervision level, find out what their attitude is to drinking and smoking. It's a very different culture there. By the way, parenthetically, folks, the best piece of advice I could give you, you know what the best source of information about schools are? Cab drivers in Israel. It's one of the most brilliant pieces, practical pieces of advice. I love listening to people, so I ask lots of questions. You know, when you ask a lot and you're quiet, you learn a lot. So it's hard for me. The quiet part is hard for me. But, I force myself. So they said, you know, go to cab drivers and ask them which school, list the schools, which of these schools supervise the kids best. They know because they're bringing kids back at 4 in the morning. And the other ones, you know, converse, the flip side of that is some kids give me, here's an extra 200 shekel, get me back before 12 o'clock because I get busted. So do your homework. I don't think you should send your kids to schools that don't match your philosophy on anything. You know, I keep finding this, that people in high schools, it's probably more predominant in Israel. What the heck, let me be controversial. You know, parents who want, very often you send your children, let's say, to a school, let's say for, take anything, drinking is one example, but going to college is another example. If you want your kids to go to college, don't send them to a school where the staff speaks that the kids shouldn't go to college. I'm saying about everything in life, or the other way, that's more liberal than you are. You're not going to find the perfect fit, but about important things, I think it says something if a school lets the kids get roaring drunk on Purim. So find out about it before you send your kids there, and ask questions. Don't be shy. The worst that'll happen, you know. So just hopefully... We'll leave it for that. Did I answer your question? Somewhat. Okay, that's good enough. You have a follow-up or?
No, I think it's a general question.
Right. The short answer is I think you should, I really encourage you, all of you, to do diligence and really do your homework before you send your kids to school. Yes, please. Yes.
I have a question, but a follow-up. I would love a list of 3 places for boys in Eretz Israel that frown upon drinking, that you should go, that we would consider.
So I don't know. You would like a list of three schools?
Three
schools that don't?
Three, I will find that miraculous. Because we did our analysis about that the first time and the second time. And
they all do? I'm not familiar. So the answer is I'm not familiar. And maybe, just to be fair to the Rosh Yeshiva there, maybe the Rosh Yeshiva are making the same decision that I made with the beer. In other words, maybe they're saying, again, but it's something you should find out, and I think you should speak to them. Don't be shy. Speak up. Speak up. Say, listen, I really don't like, I love your school, I'm really concerned about the drinking. If enough parents speak up, you know, schools are ultimately a consumer-based place. You know, there are probably 150 Pesach programs in hotels. There's about five for Sukkot. Okay? The Rosh Yeshivas didn't make this decision. We did with our pocketbooks. So I'm saying, I think you should speak up. It is possible that the Rosh Yeshiva there are making that same choice. They say, look, if I have no alcohol here, the kids aren't going to come, and they're going to get plastered in the street. Let them tell that to you at least. I think you'd be at least encouraged to understand why they're doing it. And you know, there is something to be said for that level of thinking. I often tell, you know, I get one or two a year, parents call and say, what, Rabbi Horowitz, I sent my kid to yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, and they have a Super Bowl party in Netanya. The whole yeshiva, the Rosh Yeshiva takes, the whole yeshiva goes to a hotel, and they have night seder, and then they have a Super Bowl party. What kind of mishigas is this? You know, what are they doing? How can they do this? And I said, you know something? The Rosh Yeshiva gets it. And if you go, I said, take a walk and walk around the bars in Yerushalayim at 4 in the morning, and they're also having Super Bowl parties. So I'm not suggesting that every yeshiva do this. The schools who know their kids make these decisions and things. So again, there's two sides of this. Just do your homework. That's my suggestion. Yes, sir?
Just the other side of the coin a little bit.
Please. Yeah, good point. Very well. Give the man a hand.
I'm not so far off from that reality. There is drinking. There's different levels of drinking. There's different ways to drink. Yeshivas are really dealing with a very difficult reality. They know where the kids are going for the next 4 years. They're trying to have the best impact to really influence what is going to be with the next 4 years. What are they going to do? They're going to drink. How are they going to drink? How much are they going to drink? What scenarios are they going to drink? Zero tolerance is a nice idea. It doesn't really work. It's not reality. You want a healthy balance, and there are places offering that. Talk to your alumni. They really know what has happened.
When Rebellion decides that it's a mitzvah drink, that's not an issue of balance.
So let me just tell you what word
looks
distortion.
Like. That's
distortion. I've sat in the old city around guys that were shy, were self-conscious, or whatever. They got drunk on Purim, and they spoke Torah, and they were proud of themselves. It's once a year. Maybe you had a tish once in a while, they'll drink a little bit, and they start singing, and they start dancing. And it's a little bit uncomfortable to be around it, but it's really beautiful. And when I was in YU, there were guys making their own Purim sukkahs, and they were drinking responsibly. Some guys got too drunk, some guys got out of hand, but generally, beautiful experiences. It's a gamble.
Whether you agree or disagree, this guy gets it, right? That's all. That's the bottom line. And thank you very much. And like I mentioned to you, the calculus, these decisions, let me ask you this. Wouldn't you find it refreshing if you heard a Rosh Yeshiva explain it to you this way?
It's been explained, and I understand.
Like this?
I'll explain to you this much. I grew up in the world that wasn't from.
Yes.
So
Yep.
On all levels,
yes.
I have no idea how I get it. But because I get it, I'm more aware of where that fine line
right.
can be passed very easily at that age.
Right.
I'm also very aware that it's not just Purim or Shavuos or Sukkot. We have Shabbos, thank God, every week. And Shabbos every week is the bigger picture, not the Purim.
Absolutely.
And Shabbos every week, when they see their Rebbeim drinking, they don't yet have the ability to gauge what balance is because right. they're teenagers.
Right. Well,
Dr. That's a teenager.
Dr. Benzien-Tursky, what you said, one thing you said that was very interesting. Dr. Benzien-Tursky said lots of people drink. It's what the drink does for them and why they're drinking. And the in other words, is the drink the same as you know, a good steak? Is it something that they just enjoy in moderation, or is it something that's that is a need for them? I'm going to reiterate what Dr. Tursky Sr. said and explain the limitations of my capability, my capacity to make, you know, to make judgments like this. I'm not trained in the field, and I want to make that perfectly clear, only because the drinking is an issue is something that does come up. I do, again, just before we close out this drinking thing, my point, to the bottom line is that we need to close in a couple of minutes. I'll take one more question. The idea is to really have an informed discussion. And these informed discussions come from listening to parents who've spoken to, from listening to relative youngsters, and like you said, speak to alumni of the schools and find out what's going on. I think that the more we get it, the more we teach our children to get it, especially in the area of safety, the safer we'll be. Last question. Anybody? Yes, please. Right. And God bless the shuls. There are some shuls, I don't know what the shuls policy is, but there are shuls that don't let any alcohol in, period, or, you know, not hard liquor, or control, have it in moderation. Or what does it tell the kids if they go to a Shalom Zachar and they see the adults, you know, drinking extraordinary amounts? And, you know, what kind of modeling is that? So it's a complicated parsha. It's a complicated idea. Just one last thing, speaking of getting it, I've been, like I mentioned, I started teaching eighth graders. I started teaching in 1982. One of the things I noticed over the years was that, again, I taught the weakest track in the school. Aleph class, the Aleph track, has kids who get Alephs. You know, I always say Bays has Bays through Tough. You know, like your Bays, Vav, Chaf, you know, Lamed. You know, the brilliant kids who are restless, kids who have stuffed nebuch at home that they can't concentrate, kids with genuine learning disabilities, kids who are unfortunately just not blessed with a high level of intellect. You know, there are so many different reasons. One thing I saw after a year or two of doing this, that what they all had in common is none of them got Gemara, is that they didn't understand, all of them. They didn't get Hebrew, they didn't know Hebrew, they didn't know Aramaic, they were being taught by rote, and they weren't given the tools to make it. And I started way back. I didn't have the training. I didn't have the tools. I didn't have the know-how to do what I had, what the Rebbeim and the Yeshiva did. But I started a two-week, I called it spring training. I said, it's calisthenics. You're going to hate it, but you need it to play ball. So I taught the kids Hebrew and Aramaic, my eighth graders, like I would beginner learners. And It was made an unbelievable difference. And I created materials when I started my yeshiva. I was committed to creating a beginner Gemara program. Folks, if your kids aren't making it in Gemara, Gemara is tort law in Latin with no punctuation and some of the pages out of order. That's really what it is. For 11-year-olds. So we created a labor of love. It took us 15 years. It's a 5-month program to introduce kids to Gemara slowly, carefully, who these folks are, why we need to learn this, how deductive reasoning works. And there's an introductory section for general background knowledge, and then there are pages of actual text of Gemara with graphs, and it's set up, Lahavdil, like a secular book textbook with all kinds of review questions and everything. I'm kind of biased. I mean, I put a lot of love into this. I have some copies outside if any of you are interested in having a look. And Bechlal, overall, the way I was able to function all the years teaching the weakest students in the school, I always believed that there was an answer key. You know, every 3-year-old comes to school wanting to learn. I never saw a 3-year-old in nursery say, I hate school. You know, so there's an answer key, and I encourage you as parents, if your kids are, I'm not just waiting for Gemara, but for everything, if your kids aren't making it, they're having difficulty, don't give up till you find the answer. There is a reason. And don't let anybody ever tell you that your kid doesn't want to learn. Don't let anybody tell you. You advocate for your children. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope you find it helpful. Thank you.